I don't think you know this story, but I do, just because I was working in Peoria, central Illinois, further south, years ago. But in 1990, there was a guy named Scott Heimdall. Scott was 27 years old at the time. He was an adventurous fellow. He was working at the time, not living in Peoria, though that's where he was from and that's where his family was. He was working in northern Ecuador in a gold mine. He was a young adventurer, Dave Aminian said in the Journal Star this past weekend, a young adventurer in South America working for a gold mining operation in northern Ecuador in 1990. And as this Peorian was working in the gold mine, Marxist militants came up and took him captive. They kidnapped him and they held him for ransom. They wanted $1.2 million. And suddenly Peoria had a problem. I mean, Peoria is a nice town and there's a lot of folks there and they're generous too, but it was kind of a different age. You could not do a GoFundMe page. You couldn't reach out nationally as easily as you could today. And the idea of getting $1.2 million was daunting. His parents weren't rich. They didn't have $1.2 million. The U.S. government doesn't pay ransom. I mean, as small in a way as $1.2 million sounds, it was not going to happen. So then they told the militants, they said, we don't have $1.2 million. And they said, okay, how about $60,000? Which struck me as a rather random number. But now, I was doing radio at the time in Peoria, Illinois. We had a number we could get our heads around. Clever, these militants. And so suddenly, everybody was having bake sales and car washes. People were standing on street corners with signs saying money for Scott. At the radio station I worked at, people were driving through the parking lot as we broadcast from the parking lot, and they were putting money in the box, which was really weird because we'd never seen these militants. You, on the one hand, worried that maybe you were being played here by somebody, or maybe, doggone it, if we didn't make a concerted effort, this poor young man was going to die. We got $60,000 put together, baked good by baked good in Peoria in 1990. And the parents, trying to remember now, somebody in the family then took it back into the jungle. And they gave the terrorists the money, and they gave them Scott Heimdall back. He was released. At least that's the way I remember the story. Greg Batten is the morning man at the radio station down there. Hey, Greg, are you there?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Good. Is that what happened? That's my recollection of it.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. It was a strange time. And if I recall, I know this to be true, I had just started in radio. I'd only been doing radio for about a year. And I thought, is this what we do? Is this how this works? We stand out on the street and people put money in a bucket and we're going to give it to guerrillas in Colombia. I thought it was, we all had that strange thing you just hinted at, that this maybe wasn't real. That who is this guy? How did we end up doing this? It turns out, of course, that it was, but it was weird. That was a weird time. And our mayor at the time was a guy named Jim Maloof,
yeah,
who was all over national television. Jim wasn't a shy guy.
No.
I do remember him getting on the Today Show and Good Morning America, pleading for people to help and the State Department to get involved. And there wasn't much appetite for the government to help Scott.
No, there wasn't. And again, do you also agree with my observation that I think you could get $1 million today pretty quickly. People are getting that for their cats, but this thing just, you didn't have a platform to. So you had the Today Show and stuff like that, but it felt to me like that money pretty much came from the citizens of Central Illinois.
Oh, it absolutely did, because even if you were watching the Today Show in New York or Chicago or L.A., how did you get it to them? There was no, you didn't. Put it on your, you didn't text it to them. You didn't, you
There's
know,
no PayPal
mechanism.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
no PayPal.
Well, and
something I learned just over the weekend is Scott was not in Colombia when he got grabbed. He was in the river between Ecuador and Colombia in a boat, and the guys saw him from across the way and realized he was an American, and this is how they funded things. They would kidnap people. And they came up to the boat and killed the guy that was driving the boat.
Oh, wow.
So there was, and then grabbed Scott. And so he wasn't, like, in a place he shouldn't have been. He he got grabbed from, I guess would have been called, you know, waters that were, you know, safe at the time, but not for him that day. It was really a strange day.
It was in that same 5 year span or so that Peoria, you know, you said you just got started in radio. Well, this is what we do. Crazy stuff happens, and Peoria seems to find itself in the middle of it. The next thing you know, we're in the parking lot, and there's a line of vans with people handing $20 bills out the window. It was bizarre. This is the same time that in Peoria, the Russian-American beauty pageant was going to take place.
I remember that.
And the same guy, this mayor, Jim Maloof, who was the sweetest, greatest advocate for Central Illinois that will ever live, Jim Maloof, Maloof Realty, big deal down there. His name's still on stuff. Jim had a big heart for St. Jude, and the telethon would feature him in Peoria, Illinois every year, too. I mean, he was just a good, generous, giving man. But he was also a ham, and he was so gregarious, you didn't always know what to believe coming out of Jim Maloof's mouth. And so Jim, I don't even know how it got started, but we decided in Peoria that we were going to help USA Russian relations at the time that they were still the USSR. And we were going to have a beauty pageant in Peoria, I think it was, and it would be women from Russia and women from the United States, and we would have a beauty contest. And it was some, and a delegation from Russia came to Washington, D.C. to plan this thing with this guy, Jim Maloof. And I was with the delegation from Peoria. So we meet these crazy Russian people who, turns out, it was sort of like the meeting that the Trumps took in the tower. Weren't really going to deliver us a beauty pageant, but had some other agenda. And they're kind of flipping out inside the Congressman Bob Michael's office. And we're just kind of watching this thing thinking, it's nutty enough that we want to have a beauty pageant. What are these people talking about? It was a very strange scene. But this is the kind of shtick that Jim Maloof always got people into. And it was always boostering Central Illinois, but you also wondered what the heck's going on here.
Which was why when the Heimdall story happened, we were like, is this real? Is this a legitimate thing? And of course, unlike the beauty pageant, which I had forgotten about, it was absolutely tragically real. I do have an explanation on the ransom drop.
So how'd that go?
The originally $1.2 million. By the time that we had any money put together, Scott was very, very sick. He was captured for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
He got malaria, and he was dying. Every day that he was not released, the kidnappers, saw his value going down. And finally, the Heimdalls, Mr. and Mrs. Heimdall, his parents, finally got a hold of these people through some means, I'm not sure how, and said, look, all we got 60 grand. That's all we're going to get. That's it. And they said, okay, because they thought Scott was going to die in the next day or two, and they wanted something and not have this just go to waste. So the Heimdalls made it all the way to Columbia. They went up into the woods. They went up into the mountains. Like miles, like 50, 60 miles up into the Columbia jungle with a suitcase full of money and a gun. And they handed over the money, and they handed over their son, who was on the verge of death at that point.
How is that not made into a movie? Can you believe this?
I don't know. It's a great movie.
Tom Hanks as the beleaguered father.
Yes. And somehow Russians are involved. I don't know how we bring them in.
Well, so then they bring him back, and he was grateful. You know, he didn't cash in on his celebrity status. He was a bit of
He was shy.
Yeah.
He was a shy guy. He was very shy. And he did nothing. He had been born and raised in Peoria with the idea of he wanted to be a treasure hunter. That's what he wanted to do for his life, always. And when he got home, he was so shook by that story and by the near death and everything, of malaria and being kidnapped. He didn't do any of that for 10 years. And a local journalist down here by the name of Terry Towery wrote a series of articles about it on the 10th anniversary. And it reignited Scott's desire to be a treasure hunter. And he went back out, and I can't remember if you just said this a moment ago, but Mr. Heimdall died over the weekend at the age of 56 of a heart attack while still discovering treasure. this time down in Florida.
So having survived all of that, malaria, the death of the man in the boat, the whole kidnapping ordeal, he then goes back to the life of a treasure hunter, and they find him dead in the cabin in the boat.
Yeah. He had just found, him and his crew, I think it's Blue Waters International, or something like that, his company, just found recently, and were given the rights to a huge amount of coins and millions of dollars worth of treasure from a ship called the SS Pulaski, which had crashed along the East Coast, south of South Carolina, I think, somewhere up there, you know, as Florida goes up the East Coast to Georgia and South Carolina, in the 1800s. And they just found that recently. And so he had it. He had the treasure.
What a shame. So at 56, after all of that, they find him dead on the boat and, you know, maybe on the verge of his biggest, you know, payout, his biggest discovery.
The biggest find he ever had, yeah.
So I saw that and I said, Scott Heimdall, how do I know that name? And then I kind of caught up on the story. I said to Brenda, do you remember the name Scott Heimdall? She made the same face I did when I first stumbled upon it because you pointed it out to me. And then I said, that's the guy who we raised the ransom money for. Dan DiOrio and I were in the parking lot one morning and people were coming through handing money to us. She said, you were always doing stuff like that when you were in Peoria. That's middle America radio in the 80s and 90s, and it's a beautiful thing. We need to go back to that kind of civic and community engagement, but that's sort of beside the point. So our best wishes to the Heimdalls and to everybody in Peoria who is probably doing just a little whiplash about that story. It has a very sad ending, but at least he was able to get out of the jungle alive, and just how strange that must have been for his parents. About 30 years ago, 27, 29 years ago.
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know what the reaction would be today. I think we would demand, you know, State Department intervention, and we'd call our congresspeople, and I don't even remember we even involved politicians in that story back then. I don't think, besides the mayor being the cheerleader for it, we're like, all right, we'll raise money, here we go.
That's the thing. I mean, that's the thing. The same way, you remember when the Bradley Braves of Peoria, Illinois, made it to the NCAA tournament? Nobody thought they would get there. And they were actually a good team. We thought they'd get there, but, you know, they were in the top 10, the Bradley Braves, in 1990 or so. And but the team, for some reason, did not have enough money to send the cheerleaders to the tournament.
Right.
And so when there was a story in the paper the first day of the tournament, of the March Madness, Thursday's games, they said, you'll see the team, but you won't see the cheerleaders on the sidelines because the team didn't budget enough money for it. So then we said, hey, we need to get the cheerleaders out there. And somebody goes, I've got a plane. And next thing you know, we're in the parking lot and people are driving and drop monies in buckets so we could buy plane tickets for the cheerleaders.
Yeah, that was the way we did it. That's the way, actually, you're right. I wish we were back doing that again. That was good.
So Tom Hanks, the same way listen, if Captain Phillips is a movie, and you kind of know the outcome of that one, I think that the Scott Heimdall story is a story of something, but it's just hard to believe because, A, we all just kind of cobbled together the ransom the same way we got money for cheerleaders or a silly beauty pageant. We were putting money together to give it to Marxist terrorists in the jungles of Central America. And then this mom and dad who, just like you and me, can you imagine how weird it would be to then fly down there and go into the hills and hope your son is there and alive in this hole? That doesn't make any sense, but it really happened.
And hope that they don't kill you and take the money anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they've already killed. Why do they care? You know, they don't care.
Yeah.
Life in Peoria good, Greg Batten?
Life in Peoria is good, John. Here, just a note, it's 69 degrees because I know how much weird you are about the temperature there a few minutes ago at different places. So I just wanted to throw out our temperature real quick.
Well, the way the game works is I would have guessed it through triangulation, but I would have guessed 69. Yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
If you're in Central Illinois, listen to WMBD, AM 1470, Greg Batten, Dan DiOrio, and people work there. And they're really good at what they do. Nice to hear you, Greg.
See you, buddy. I love you. See you.
I love Greg Batten.